This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me is Darius Thomas.
Man, you got me fired up.
Robbie Kuyuth has been working with teams and sports as a motion designer for over a decade. He focuses on building motion identities that are visually consistent across all platforms. From NFL to MLB, NBA, NWSL, and college, his work can be seen on the big screen and on social. Robbie builds custom work to move brands forward with sweet keyframes and intentional motion design.
Are you at time that is?
Yep.
All right, let's go 54.
All right.
Perfect.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller Effects, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit Baller Effects on YouTube and get started today.
Excited today to have Robbie Kuyuth joining us to talk about sports and motion and his path to become motion design extraordinaire for teams and sports across social and venue and anything else that teams ask him for. So, Robbie, thank you so much for joining us and taking the time to chat today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Can you start by giving us some background on sports and why you got into sports initially?
Yeah, man. Honestly, I never thought that I could get a job in sports. I was originally working at a local church, designing stuff and doing video stuff, really just doing whatever they needed me to do there. I eventually was there for 5 years, and it just felt like the right time to hop out. So I started applying to anything, like all of Indeed. I think I forgot the other one, but I've applied to every single job. I have like 200 cover letters still on my computer because I was just wanted a job. I just wanted to like have a creative job outside of the church. And I got absolutely no responses from anybody. And I felt after 3 months, like I just got to switch up my career. And at the last, not the last second, I probably would have waited another month, but Washington State University contacted me. They wanted to interview me. And from then on, my eyes were open to there are creative jobs in sports. And I don't know why I didn't know that. I just thought that in order to have a job in marketing or sports, you had to have so many years experience and you had to, you know, work your way up and all that. So I kind of just got into sports because they were the first ones to give me a chance. And I also love sports. And so that's how it started. But I never set out to be in the sports design creative industry.
That's awesome. So with Washington State, did you work in Washington State?
No. Okay. They brought me out there. They offered me the job and it was really hard to say no to them. But because it's so far from where I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico, it was just not the right timing. And I had that feeling like this isn't it, but it gave me confidence that, okay, there are creative jobs in sports. I think I have what it takes to make it. And then it kind of just, it went from there. Eventually my first job was at ASU though, working as the graphic designer for their university and athletics. So Washington State wasn't there, but it played a huge part in just opening my eyes and giving me confidence that there were creative jobs.
Awesome. And then how did you get into becoming a freelancer now and working with teams all across sports?
Yeah, that's a long process. So I went from ASU, then eventually I was at ASU for about a month and a half, and which is horrible, right? I was so afraid that it would look bad on my resume, but the Rams came into my email inbox and it was just something I couldn't pass up. And so they offered me a motion designer job after a few rounds of interviewing. And at the time I didn't think I was a motion designer. I thought I was a graphic designer who could do some motion and also loved videography at the time. And so when they hired me, I was terrified. Bad imposter syndrome. I was like, they're going to figure out within the first month and I'm going to be out of here. Thankfully, that didn't happen. And from the Rams job led to me moving back to Albuquerque just because I was getting married to my wife. And we felt at that time, due to family things and just being closer to home, like we want to stay in Albuquerque rather than relocate to LA. So I worked I worked full-time remote with STN Digital, which is an awesome social media agency. And after a year and a half of that and doing a lot of video editing compared to motion design, which again, I didn't know that I liked motion design more than video editing. I just kind of was able to assess and be like, I like motion design. I like designing stuff. I'm doing a lot of editing sizzles and these quick highlights for boxing, which just didn't really scratch it for me. So I decided to jump to freelance just hopefully for a few months because I wanted to get back into the NFL. And so once I released my first reel, I had a couple of clients offer me work and it just went from there. But I had zero intention of being self-employed or freelance or staying in freelance.
So let's go back a bit. Like at what age or time period did you recognize that you wanted to be a creative at all?
Creative at all? I just never thought like I had the skills to be a professional creative. I loved making videos and they were really stupid, like really dumb videos for either like the church that I went to or just for fun for like class projects. Like I loved making just ridiculously stupid videos, but ultimately that was creativity, which I can look back and see that now. But that started in early high school. And it was a lot of video creation, a lot of video editing, either those stupid videos or highlights for like local football teams, high school and youth. But it all started in high school and just kind of slowly added skills and kept figuring out that I love to create.
And what did you do like to, obviously you started with like small videos that you probably thought were trash, but like, what did you do to like get better? Like, did you keep doing the same kind of stuff? It, you know, was YouTube University a thing back then, or was it just some trial and error, you know, going to shoot different stuff?
No, I mean, YouTube University is pretty much where I graduated from because my college degree is, I mean, if you looked at it, it's probably worth nothing. I finished, but like I learned, I didn't go to school for motion design or anything creative. It's called liberal arts. So you pretty much pick your courses and you try to justify to a counselor why it makes sense that you should be able to make this degree up. So I did that and I finished it, but really everything I know has come from YouTube, has come from Vimeo, back in the day, Pinterest, just any tutorials that I can possibly find. So it's all YouTube and it's really little class, taught.
I feel a little bit offended, Robbie. I have an English degree, so I know
exactly
what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Know exactly what you're talking about with that liberal arts. But it took me a while to understand that even though I wasn't learning the technical skills of like videography or editing or any of that, the storytelling aspect really helped, you know, with all the different subject matter and all that. So.
Yeah,
that was funny.
That makes sense. There's always something to learn. I'm not saying I didn't learn anything in college. I'm just saying it could have been better.
Probably had fun. Like yeah. I did. I had a lot of fun.
It was all right. It was an all right time. Yeah.
What's the most random class that you took that you can pull, that you were able to pull information from that you may still use today?
Man, most random class. I took something. I was telling my brother about this the other day because he's on like the web and the coding side of it. There's a program called Processor, and there was a class called Coding for Art. And you literally just coded, but it would make these incredible I'm sure you've seen it, but like these patterns, these animated patterns and just things you couldn't make in After Effects and you can't make using these. I mean, I'm sure you could, but like it's a simple code creating this incredible piece. And so that has helped in terms of, sometimes it's helpful to, I haven't done it in a while, but back in the day, I would create something and just experiment in Processor because it's so fast, and then try to emulate it in After Effects, or at least get kind of that inspiration to start. If you haven't tried Processor, like, you just got to play with it because it's so much fun, and you can create such unique visuals with such a little code.
So I have a kind of a spinoff of that. And so even though you got a degree in liberal arts, mm-hmm. like, at the time that you were in school, were you kind of like thinking that you wanted to do some design, and or was the place that was the school that you went to, did they have something like that? Kind of like going into college, like, what was the idea of like, hey, I'm gonna get this degree and do this with it?
Yeah, man, like, that was very difficult because I, at that time, I didn't know you could be a professional creative, or mm-hmm. I just thought, like, you needed so much more experience than I had. So I went into college wanting to be an athletic trainer, so the people on the sidelines. Then I switched mm-hmm. because I can't do blood. So I switched to nutrition, and then I switched to exercise science, and then I switched to physical education to become a PE coach. And I don't want to say I wasted my first 3 years at UNM, but it really just got me the core classes. And then eventually that's when the liberal arts thing took in. So I was like, I have so many credits. I don't want to stay here another 4 years. And UNM didn't have, University of New Mexico, that is, they didn't have a motion design program. They didn't have a design program back then. It was just film. And the film program was 4 years. So long story short, no, I had no idea that I was going to end up being a creative. But I did know that sports, if I could choose, I wanted to do something athletic and something revolving around sports.
Awesome. What was your first job or experience out of college?
Out of college, so after the church, it would have been Arizona State University, the one I was at for 1.5 months. It was awesome. The people there, awesome. The city of Tempe, incredible. ASU was incredible. It was just the bulk of my job was InDesign. And so I was creating a lot of pamphlets for their promotional partnership with Mayo Medical Clinic. And again, I didn't know what I didn't know. But after about 2 weeks of that, I was like, oh my gosh, this is rough. Like, I got to get out of here.
So you're making stuff in InDesign. You came there, you learned graphic design. And you did some editing at STN, working on some motion design. And now you've kind of landed in motion design mostly, I think, right? Like, that's what I know you for. That's what I know you for. Like, do you ever offer any of those services, or has any of that information or knowledge helped you in your process or your thinking of how you're going to approach a project? Or collaborating with other people, I guess?
Well, like, you know, Justin, like, being a good graphic designer is kind of the first step to being able to be a good motion designer. Like, if you don't know design, you could create the coolest movements in After Effects or the coolest whatever, but if it doesn't look good and it's not designed well, then nobody's going to care and you're not going to get jobs. So I think that's the number one, I would say, to anybody wanting to be a motion designer, is like, you have to know just good, solid, basic graphic design. And then in terms of like the other skills, having editing skills and being able to cut videos is always helpful with motion design, either for just full out motion projects or even cutting a reel or a sizzle or something like that. It's, you know, motion design and graphic design go hand in hand, but also motion design and video editing also go hand in hand. So I definitely learned stuff at those jobs. In design though, I don't know, man. I haven't really found a way to implement that into everyday work experience. But who knows? Maybe it'll come up.
So as you're building your freelance career, let's talk about Couge.co a little bit, because you just launched your new brand. Yeah. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, man. I mean, I'll be honest about it. It took me 4 to 5 years to do. I had the name back in 2022, and I couldn't settle on anything. I overthink everything. So I was trying to design the logo, and I'm not a logo designer. And so I would constantly be like, I like this, come back the next day, hate it. And it literally that's a year process. I got lucky because one of my favorite designers, Brandon Moore, who he's a co-founder of Zero G now, but he used to work with the Dolphins, just an incredible dude. He posted that he had made these logos and he was selling them, and he happened to have a Roadrunner in that logo pack. And I looked at it in my head at the time, because my name is you know, Slavic, I was thinking like hammers, because Kuj, the K-U-J part, means to hammer, to forge. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm going to do blacksmith. I was looking at horseshoes, which I like the idea, but it didn't represent home for me. And I saw the Roadrunner, and that's the state bird of New Mexico. And I love Albuquerque, New Mexico. It gets a bad rap. If you've only seen Breaking Bad, there's more to Albuquerque than that. But the Roadrunner is a state bird. Brandon designed it in such a way that it looks like speed already is like, there's movement in it, even though it's static. And so I purchased that from him. And since then, it's just been kind of working to develop the brand and tone it down a little bit, like not have too much. I always have a tendency to put too much at first, trying to scale it back before the launch. But really, man, it's such a long process for me to do this. We had our first kid a year and a half ago, and that set everything back in a good way. So basically, I just don't want anyone to look at it and think that it came together within a few months, because it's been a work in progress for a long time. And I'm happy with it. I think it represents the motion, like the work, like I mentioned with the Roadrunner, and it also represents me just in terms of New Mexico and being from here and loving Albuquerque.
Yeah, that's awesome. I was thoroughly enjoyed when I saw it. So it's super cool, man. And definitely stands out. So, and the work that you obviously have that goes along with it, with your reel and all that kind of stuff, is top notch. So, but I also think the thought process and the intention that you put into it, it says a lot about what you are, who you are, and what you do and your process. So maybe we can dive a little bit into your process a little bit and how you approach your work with your clients.
Yeah. So you want me just to speak on like a normal project?
Sure.
What's this? So this is different with every single client and with every single project. And I make sure to mention this on my website, like every client, at least that I've worked with, is just so different. Like their needs are different. Some of them want in stadium. Some of them want in stadium plus broadcast. Some of them just want digital, social, web. It's always so different. But in a perfect world, and I'll mention like a perfect project first, we have, you know, a couple months is awesome to be able to develop a look and a feel, and to be able to storyboard out stuff and make sure the static frames are representative of the brand that whichever team or organization is trying to push or move forward with. So we get the storyboards done, usually a few frames. Once we have sign off on that, what I'll usually do is try to develop one to two different motion languages. And that sounds crazy, but really it's a couple different ways the type can move, maybe a couple different ways a background can interact with the type, or a transition can work, depending on whatever these brand elements are. And presenting those to the client, seeing which ones they like more, getting their feedback. And then by then, once we have that mini motion language down, developing and expanding that into, if it's a stadium project, like a graphics package. So, you know, the ribbons, the main boards, making sure everything feels cohesive, but also represents the brand. If it's social, same thing. You know, you always want your brand to feel the same, look the same. Of course, energy levels can be different depending on the platform. The Chargers last year, I worked with them very closely after their rebrand with Zero G, and they came in April, and we didn't have to have this done until end of August. And that is like, that's what you want. Like, you have all the time in the world. We met twice a week and just got feedback on like little details, but also the big picture stuff. But, and I'm sure you know this, Justin, like that's pretty rare to have that much time. Yeah. I think back to 2022, and you guys just had Will from Big Creative on. He contacted me in, I think it was mid-September, and said, hey, I'm working with the Coyotes, and their motion designer was on paternity leave, I believe. And so we needed to create a full package in a month. And that was crazy, because you don't have the time of storyboarding and getting feedback. It's like, I need to produce something. It needs to get approved within a week, ideally, because we have to build the rest of the package. And so for that, what I honestly did was leaned back on my personal projects that I had done that weren't, you know, posted anywhere or for another team, and kind of reskinned those. And thankfully, one of them landed and we were able to just have a good starting point to branch out from there. But I wish I had one process and workflow that I could say works for every project and every team, but I've never experienced that yet. It's more so just being flexible and having the ability to pivot and tools to use to fall back on in case your timeline is a little bit dire.
Love it. So kind of in the same vein, in a perfect world, if you're working on a project with a team or an entity, what would be the perfect amount of time like that you would have for a project? Like how far in advance would you love for them to reach out? I know this is a tricky question because
That's hard.
Some stuff can be easy and, you know, a couple of weeks you can knock it out, and some stuff is like you really want to. But just thinking like if you were working with a team that, you know, you like their colors or you just mm-hmm. like them, like if you had this amount of time, what would be kind of a great amount of time to knock out a killer project?
Okay. To put in the great category, I would say I would love to have 2.5 months lead up just so we can get through those exploration phases and really work through the motion language. Like if you're able to really dissect the motion language and think and mind map, like how is this going to move? How can this represent your brand? I think you need those extra few months before production starts of creating all the other screen sizes. So I'd say 2.5 months or more would be phenomenal, but things can get done in, you know, less than a month if needed. But ideally, we don't always have to do that. But the Chargers were great, man. But again, they're at SoFi, and SoFi is another beast in terms of screens. So like, you don't really have that option to be as last minute. So, but I can't say enough good things about them and their creative team just getting ahead of it.
What about you, Justin?
I 100% agree with Robbie.
It depends on
the project and what you have. Yeah, I've done some projects in like 3 weeks for social focused content, like completely, and that's because I was approached and was like, "Hey, season starts in a month, and we need to get this done." Like, you know, like if you're up against the time frame, that's just what it is. And it wasn't like, "Hey, we need like 6 different ribbons and a main board and." This was all like mostly social assets and primarily like 16x9 for the most part. So it wasn't like a huge ask.
Were you happy with how it turned out?
With the time, yeah, I think so.
Yeah. That's cool, man.
It was stressful because it's like I gotta work magic or something, you know, like you gotta get it done and you don't have time to like set it to the side. I feel like that's some of the power is working on it, setting it to the side and not thinking about it for a couple days and then coming back to it with fresh eyes. Like,
yeah.
That's huge.
That is big. I forgot about that. Yeah. Being able to step away or at least get somebody else's opinion is so helpful when you're staring at the same thing all day.
Absolutely. So motion design is, you know, Justin and I, when we have people on along with our other co-hosts, we oftentimes talk about how kind of new our industry is, even though it's been around a while. Mm-hmm. But like motion design is kind of like some of these other elements that are like now a new toy that everybody wants, right?
Yeah.
What's the biggest hurdle that you have with getting teams to understand, like, you know, some people may say, oh, we want to do this thing, but we need it fast. Like, how do you kind of deal with people wanting stuff fast and getting them to understand like this is what it actually takes to make it happen?
Bro, that is a phenomenal question.
I wrote that one down. I'm just kidding.
I haven't had that. Usually I don't get that issue with the larger, you know, professional teams because I feel like they know that by now. It's usually like the, what do you call it? Semi-pro soccer, I've had that issue with, and they just don't understand just because, you know, they might have just installed video boards like last year. And so they're new to this whole thing. And so I think I had a request last year and it was like, hey, can we get a goal animation and a matchup loop template and a headshot template? And I'm like, yeah, of course. And they're like, okay, well, you think we could see all of that in like a week and a half? And I'd already like signed the contract and stuff with them. And so I had to explain to them, like, this stuff takes a really long time. And it's mainly just being communicative, really, like really being able to communicate from the beginning with those type of clients. Like, I can get you something, but it's not going to look like the rest of my work that you see. Like, this stuff takes time. It takes time to design. It takes time to animate. And then on the templating side of it, the toolkitting portion also takes a lot of time. And so I've definitely come up against that. Maybe not a ton though, with the pro teams, but just like with everything, you just got to be good communicating and setting expectations from the beginning. Because again, you know, people don't know what they don't know. And so they also are coming from, they just don't know motion. And so you got to kind of explain that to them instead of just acting like, oh yeah, I can get it done, and not saying anything to them. They get it back and they're disappointed in your work. You know, that could be a whole issue of its own.
Absolutely. You talked about imposter syndrome a little bit earlier, or made mention of it. At what point in your career, or was there a project that really helped like ease or erase some of that imposter syndrome, like where you felt like, I do belong in this and I'm here for the long haul?
Yeah. Honestly, like, I still deal with imposter syndrome pretty bad. The working for the Rams, that first day, I remember walking up in Agoura Hills, California, walking under the Rams logo and just feeling so grateful, first of all, that I was there, but also, like I mentioned, they're going to fire me within a month. And I would say the first time there, like, that I felt like, okay, maybe I can do this, was about a month in. One of the creative directors, Corey Befford, and he's still with the Rams, awesome dude, he let me design the touchdown animation that year. And I wish I had it. It's just so unconventional, but I still can't believe that he played that the rest of the season, because it just wasn't like flashy and sporty. Like, it was just very like minuscule things going on with the type, like to build out touchdown. But anyways, when I first saw that during a preseason game, it just kind of, I remember feeling like, okay, it looks good up on the board. It is unconventional, but I think I can do this. And it's just been project from project, you know, like, I'll go a little bit, my imposter syndrome will build, and then I'll do a project and I'm like, that was good. That was really good. I can do this. And I would say it's just kind of a roller coaster. It's my entire career. And I don't want to come on here and act like I don't deal with it anymore, because I deal with it immensely. And I was talking to Justin beforehand, and it's just, you know, with social media, you see everybody's highlights, whether career-wise, fitness-wise, life, you know, being a dad and stuff like that. And you just always feel like you got to do more. So not something I've mastered, and I don't know if I ever will, but there definitely have been projects that have helped with that a little bit.
Yeah, I was telling him, I wish I, hopefully someday my work looks like his.
See, like, and I was telling him, like, I don't know how to do those awesome toolkit tricks, and he's so talented at being able to teach people complex ideas regarding motion in such a, makes it seem simple. And that's a skill on its own. So even just being able to talk to people, I think it can help alleviate that imposter syndrome. But I live in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and it's very rare that I'm able to have an in-depth conversation about something like this. So it's been nice, you know, hearing that from Justin, because I'm like, I struggle with that too, man. So I think we all do it at some point, at least.
Yeah. I think all creatives, like, at some point, especially if you do a deep dive on like social, like, you see what somebody else is doing and you start measuring. And at the end of the day, we're all just trying to like find our own place, right? Like,
exactly.
And do great work. That's why working with working with other really good creatives is so helpful, because I remember I was in a situation where I was working with some other killer creatives, and like, instead of us like competing against each other, we used it as like a friendly competition, right?
Okay.
And so, you know, one person would do something and the other one would be like, man, I like what they did. Let me go try to like one up it. Not as a, oh, I'm better than you, but like, as creatives, we're all like trying to like create the next best thing or like do something really good and just be appreciated for it. Because oftentimes, you know, we may think that we have thankless jobs, but both of you are doing like killer stuff in your own you know, atmosphere and just, you know, keep doing great things. So when it comes to design and motion, like you mentioned typeface, right? Have you ever been faced with a situation where a team or a brand has like a really bad typography or font, and you had to like make it work?
Absolutely. I'm not
dropping
names.
You don't have to name the team.
Yeah, man. I still like, I mean, how do I explain this without speaking about that? I think the typography is the hardest thing. And I'll mm-hmm. say specifically when teams have, and most teams nowadays, like have those really, my fingers don't fit. Oh, I guess this isn't a video anyways, but a really wide board. And they have like a very condensed font. That mm-hmm. that's something that drives me a little, not crazy. It's just like, guys, we got to have like an optional condensed font and a wider font, because it just looks so much better on those big screens. If you can take up space with touchdown and it fills up 90% of the board rather than it filling up 55% of the board. And so mm-hmm. that's a very specific design example. I say for the most part though, I've been blessed to work with amazing designers, incredible creative directors, who just have come up with some phenomenal brand elements. But I'd say the fonts are the number one issue that I come across where I'm like, man, I just wish we could use something else here. Or it'll fit really well on, so like the condensed font will look awesome on social. And then they're like, okay, we want to do something similar for in stadium, and you do it and you're like, oh my, like it just doesn't feel right, you know?
Yeah, I understand that completely, because I remember when I was at a certain place and they had spent a lot of good money on a on an official font for the school. And the thing that they didn't understand is that the font worked really well on the jerseys, but it didn't necessarily work well digitally, like in video.
Okay,
and so you find yourself like trying to make something, because it wasn't one of those fonts where it had like four different, you know, and I know hardly anything about fonts, but I know that it was driving me up a wall. But like having the different weights, and they were like, oh no, we have to use this official. And it's like, you should have paid a little bit more to get more weights, because it was like a specially designed font for the school. But gotta have options, especially in the digital space.
Yeah, you gotta throw your weight around.
There you go. Nice one, Justin.
I like that one.
Dad jokes, man.
Dad jokes of the day, yeah.
Yeah. He's been practicing.
when you're working with teams, how often do you get pre-designed assets versus mm-hmm. how often do you get, hey, here's our brand guide and here's some of our elements. We want to see what you come up with and make something cool.
Yeah, I would say 90% of the time is the latter. I get the brand guidelines, their elements, and then I just make it match, make it feel the same. I have gotten storyboards from clients, and I actually don't hate that, because if they know exactly what they want, I would rather give them exactly what they want. It's fun to experiment, but also I'm sure you can relate to this. Like sometimes during a busy season and you just feel like you have to come up with so many ideas, it's almost refreshing. Like, oh, they got this designed. All I got to do is make this thing move. And so actually the Chiefs, they like to design a lot of storyboards, and they've got some phenomenal designers in house. And so they do that more than any of my other clients. But it's good because, again, if they know what they want, my goal is simply to give them what they want, you know? So, but 90% of the time it's the other option, lots of style guide studying and stuff like that.
Nice. Have you done any work with the Raiders?
I did work with the Raiders there. So that was my first, that's what helped me jump to freelance, because they said they needed seasonal help and it was their last season in Oakland. And being a huge Broncos fan, I absolutely hate the Raiders. But
I was going to say, because you do the Chiefs and the Chargers are the two that you had mentioned before. And I know you're a huge Broncos fan. So
I've done the AFC West, man. Yeah, I love the AFC because I grew up watching these games, even though I don't like the other teams, it's history. And like, you know, I grew up rooting against Trent Green on the Chiefs and LaDainian Tomlinson running all over the Broncos and Rich Gannon torching the Broncos on his way to get crushed in that Super Bowl. So, you know, it's fun though. And you get to know the people at these teams and you root for them. Like I've told people that the Chiefs, I've worked with the Chiefs for a long time, and Jordan, I don't know if it's Geisler or Geisler, so I may be screwing that up, but the creative director there, Drew Morris, one of their designers, Nick Gogis or Gugis, you get to know the people and then you like root for them. So I found myself, once the Broncos are eliminated, Chiefs are still in, I'm like, I want to see these guys succeed. I want to see them get Super Bowl rings. I want to, you know, I just want their career to be so incredible, like better than anything they've imagined. And so I found myself rooting for the Chiefs lately, the Chargers, Raiders. I don't know if I can say I've ever rooted for the Raiders, but I did have to wear a Raiders polo once, and that about killed me. I sent a picture to my wife and it was like, don't show anybody this.
Dangerous to have it available.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, bias aside, being a Broncos fan, and obviously having a tie with the Rams, because you know that was kind of the first major jump. What's been one of your most favorite projects that you've ever worked on?
Yeah, my absolute favorite project, even probably above the Broncos stuff, is working with the Eagles in 2023 to do their backdrop, their set for their Kelly Green release. The work was fun, but the part that set it apart was they wanted a very specific 90s hand-drawn style, and they sent great references. And I tried my hand at it for a week and a half, like just doodling, and nothing felt right. I started talking to some of my artistic friends here and asking, you know, if they would be interested. Nobody seemed, I don't know why no one seemed interested, but no one really did. And so I was talking to my wife one night and I was like, I can't get this right. And my wife is incredible. She's an incredible mom, incredible wife, and she's a nurse. She's not artistic. Sorry, I almost said autistic at all. And so she took the iPad and she was like, let me try to doodle and come up with this. And so I went back upstairs to work, and I came down and she had some like solid progress on it. Like it needed help and it needed direction, but she ended up designing, creating about 85% of it. I added some slight motion and did some elements, but that was like her work. And when they released the Kelly Green stuff, it was a lot of that black and white hand doodling behind Jalen Hurts, and all those hero images were all over ESPN, all over the sports talk, all over social. And I still do this today. Like it's just so cool to sit back and be like, that wasn't me. Like I wasn't the best option for that, but my wife was. And to be able to do a project with her and see her have fun with it. And I'm sure she got frustrated with me at times because I was very particular, but still, I just look back and I'm like, it's just so cool to watch somebody else, maybe who never thought that they could do something so incredible. And the Eagles were so happy with it. So I don't know if any project will ever pass that up, because I just got to see her, you know, have success in something she's not trained in at all.
Yeah, that's cool. It was awesome too. Hopefully her rate was good.
I disagree.
Yeah, free.
Yeah, you know, that's a Cowboys.
You got
Cowboys fan.
Free housing.
No, great, great stuff. So
thank you, man.
Let's talk advice. What's some of the best advice you've ever gotten in this industry? And what's some advice that you would have for the next generation of or up-and-coming motion designers looking to cut their teeth in this industry?
Yeah, some of the best advice I ever got was when I couldn't get a job. So it was before I was even in the sports industry. But someone just told me, like, you got to see the long picture here. Like, I was posting stuff to Behance, getting zero, like, 2 likes, 46 views. And eventually, like, a project caught fire and got me interviews. But it was just continuing to work and do personal projects and learn, even when I wasn't 100% sure that I had what it took to be in the industry. And so instead of giving up after a month of not getting jobs, it was, okay, my portfolio shows zero sports. I want to be in sports. Let's do some personal projects that involve sports. And once I started to do that, that's when I started to get calls and emails and DMs about internships and stuff like that. And so I would just say not giving up too early and being honest with yourself and assessing, does your portfolio, does your website, does your social media, is it helpful in terms of you getting a job in the future? Can creative directors and managers see and translate what you have done into the job you are wanting? So that was probably the biggest advice I've ever gotten. Advice that I would give is really just to maximize everything you have, like what you have in front of you, what you have in your hands, hypothetically, is enough for what you need right now. And what I mean by that is just, it's so easy to say, I wish I had this opportunity. I wish I had this piece of equipment. I wish I had whatever. And it could be, it's different for everybody. But instead of sitting there and complaining and just wishing you had something, like use what you have and maximize it to its fullest ability. I look back on my career, and when I was doing highlight videos for my little brother's football team, I always wanted to be a videographer, but my camera was horrible in low light. It was 29.97, 1920. It just looked bad compared to the professionals. And so so many times I'd be on the bus riding to UNM, and I remember having a B&H photo video at the place with cameras. And I wanted to either purchase a camera or rent one, but I didn't. I was a poor college kid paying my way through college, working at a church. I'm thankful I never did, but because I lacked video quality, that's where I really started to learn motion, because I started to be like, okay, this highlight is what it is, but how can I add more? So I started doing these animated score bugs. And this is for high school football. Like, no one's seeing this thing. It's the end of the year banquet. But I still made the score bugs, made the matchup slates. And ultimately, those were some of the biggest, most pivotal moments in terms of my career, because that's when I learned this stuff. And if I would have had a better camera, there's no way I'm going to spend time learning motion. And so I always just try to tell everybody, just, you may want something else, but what you have in front of you may lead to something even better. And it's just your job to notice that, have a good attitude, and work your hardest.
Man, you got me fired up. I'm ready to go do some new projects.
Let's go.
So going back to another thing that you talked about that you kind of just mentioned there too, is like when you were in that kind of waiting period, working at your church, applying to different jobs, because, you know, right now the job market is probably trash for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And they're in this season of waiting or wanting it, like, you know, they may have just graduated last week and they think that they, you know, can be the next Robbie, right? Some of them may be talented enough, but
not possible. You know,
doesn't kind of happen like that sometimes. Sometimes you look out. The question is, what kept you from giving up on, you know, your dream of working in sports or with a sports team while you were, you know, getting rejection after rejection, or not yet, not good enough yet? What kept you from giving up? Because I know you say you were close, but
I was very close.
What kept you from shutting that door?
I don't know if there's a specific reason. It was that advice that I mentioned of somebody just telling me, like, put your head down and work instead of just complaining. But just believing in yourself too. Like, it's easy to, especially on social media, again, like, see somebody that you look up to or you love their work and be like, man, I can never get to that level. But if you think about that, like, that's false. Like, they learned it at some point. We live in a digital age. You can look up anything and figure out how to do something. And so I would say, if anybody's going through that today, like don't give up on yourself, because it's easy to accept less for yourself for the sake of being comfortable. And I don't mean other jobs, like working at a grocery store, or, you know, just something random like that are less than this. But if this is your passion and this is what you want to do, this scary time of not being able to find a job feels like the only thing you can see right now. But if you take a step back, what if you do get that call next month and your career changes, and instead of in 10 years, you're suffering through an office job you are working for one of your favorite teams or something like that. Like, you have to see the big picture. And I know it sucks. And it sucks to hear this because you want that immediate answer, but it'll come at the right time. You just use this season of waiting and use this season of not getting what you want to put in the work so that you become better. Don't waste it sitting down and complaining about it. And so that's kind of the only advice. Again, I know it's a tough season to be in, and nothing anybody says helps it, but I promise you there's another side to this, and it will get better.
Love it. Okay. Break out your phone. We're going to play a quick game with Robbie. Justin's going to get the timer. So we're going to give you 30 seconds, Robbie.
Okay.
We play a little game here where we like to see what's in everybody's tool bag when they're doing their thing. So we're going to give you 30 seconds to name as many things that you have to have in your bag or your possession when you're working on a killer project.
Like physically or like...
It can be physically, conceptual. It can be, yeah, anything. Like, I'm going to cheat a little bit and say, you know, whether it's the materials that you have to physically have, whether it's designing, you use a pen or an iPad or whatever.
Okay.
So we're going to name as many things that you have to put in your tool bag. So you ready?
I'm going to be horrible at this. Yes.
You got this. And 3, 2, 1, go.
Got to have a keyboard. Got to have a good mouse that has a lot of controls that are programmed to the computer. Got to have After Effects. Got to have Cinema 4D, maybe Blender. Everything's going to Blender nowadays. Got to have a couple of monitors so you can put different stuff on each screen. You got to have Spotify or iTunes going with your playlist, maybe Discover Weekly, maybe a podcast. You got to have a nice glass of cold ice water. You got to have maybe a dog keeping you company, maybe your kids 30. Screaming.
And time. Okay. Hey, that's not bad. That's a great list. Great, I like the dog in the water. Yeah.
You need that.
You got to have some type of hydration. You can't just.
And you need some company. You know, this freelance thing, being in the room by yourself.
I disagree, but that's just.
You disagree.
I'm a loner.
Dude, I mean, there's times that you can be in the room all by yourself, and there's times that you need to just get out of the house.
And get around. No, I'm a loner too. Yeah. So my son's 1.5. We didn't think through this exactly, but his bedroom is right behind here. So when he's crying, I mean, I can hear everything. And so when my wife and him are playing, it's just, I have like FOMO, like I got to get out of here and go play. So I got to figure that out. But you also, it's nice to at least hear other people while you're working.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Robbie. It's awesome to finally get to chat with you a little bit more in depth and hear more about your background and, you know, all the time and energy and effort that you put into becoming who you are and making waves in the industry. So thanks for the time. I appreciate it.
I appreciate both of you guys. Thank you so much for, again, having me on, but also everything you guys have done for this industry with this podcast and also just with your work and teaching others. It's something not everybody has the skills to do, like I've already mentioned, but I'm sure you're changing a ton of lives that you guys don't even realize yet. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.